This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, Box 13, Box 13, Box 13, Box 13.
He leaned over the shining halo of her blonde hair, reflected in the soft glow of the new moon. Oh, no, 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 not that. Holliday, my boy, why did you ever decide to write fiction for a living? You know, you could have gone into something interesting like being a truck driver, with the open road in front of you and a motorcycle cop in back. Hey, Susie, where have you been?
Don't you remember, Mr. Holliday? I went down to Star Times office.
Oh. Oh, so you did. Tell me, what's new in Box 13?
Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday. Now for Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Well, what now, Mr. Holliday? What's new in Box 13? Yesterday, a man wanted to sell me a horse for $1,000 and a ranch to go around the horse for 25 times that much. The day before, my ad for adventure brought me a reply from a golf professional who simply wanted to drive golf balls off the tip of my nose.
Mr. Holliday.
Was that Susie?
I said that when a nice young man like you runs an ad, he should get a whole box full of answers.
Oh, well, thank you, Susie.
He should get bushel baskets full.
Well, thanks again.
The place should be loaded with letters.
All right, all right. Now, what did I get?
One postcard. And from a kid at that.
A kid? You mean a child?
Sure, uh-huh.
Here, let me see it. A postcard from a youngster. It's probably a gag. Some small girl selling 10-cent packages of flower seeds for 50 cents. Sell 5,000 packages and she gets absolutely free a St. Bernard dog. Well, let's see what really is on this postcard. I wrote to you, care of Box 13, because I thought you wanted it that way. I gotta see you right away on a very important matter. I am still doing business at the old stand. Signed, Johnny Moran. Johnny Moran? Why, he's a little boy who sells newspapers on the corner. Hey, Susie, get Johnny Moran up here right away.
Oh, I can't do that, Mr. Holliday.
Why can't you do it?
Because he's here already.
Well, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, Johnny, how are you, my boy? Why didn't you just come up and see me instead of writing a postcard first?
Well, I like to do things sort of business-like. Besides, it was fun to answer an ad for Adventure Wanted. Would you really do anything, Mr. Holliday?
Sit down, Johnny, and tell me what your trouble is.
Well, I kind of wanted to see you alone. Sort of private-like.
Oh, that man-to-man stuff, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, where would you like to talk?
Well, I thought maybe you'd come down to the corner with me. I'll buy you a drink.
A drink? You interest me strangely, Johnny. Come on, let's go.
Okay.
Oh, Susie, you'll excuse us, won't you?
Well, I don't know. You better be careful, Mr. Holliday.
Careful?
I don't want Johnny teaching you bad habits.
Johnny Moran is a very nice boy. Can't be more than 12, but he certainly seems to know his way around. Yes, Holiday, if you were ordering a small boy, this is just the model you would choose. But this drinking business...
I'm worried about you, Mr. Holiday. You sure that lemon coke is enough?
Lemon cokes are always enough for me, Johnny. Especially when I spike them with an ice cube. Say, how's your banana split?
Well, this one's got a little too much chocolate. I like the last one better.
Better finish it, my boy. You want to talk business, remember?
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought you might have read about it in the newspapers. Of course, you could have missed it. It was way back on page 5.
What was on page 5?
Well, here, I got a clipping of the story. Read it.
Police announced they had recovered a portion of the jewelry stolen in last Tuesday's raid on Maury Jewelry Company. Held under suspicion of grand theft is John Moran. John Moran. Johnny, that's your father.
Yes, and he didn't do it, Mr. Holiday. I know he didn't.
Just a second. A part of the loot was found in Moran's apartment.
I don't care what they put in the newspapers, Mr. Holiday. He didn't do it. That's why I came to see you.
What about your mother, Johnny?
Well, she died when I was a baby. Pop and I lived together. But he didn't do it, Mr. Holiday. Only they won't believe me.
Oh, you've been down to the police?
Sure, I went there right away. I even offered them my $18 for bail. You know what?
What?
The old DA just patted me on the head and told me to go home. But I'll bet you could go down and talk to that district attorney and make him let my father out. You can do anything.
Well, not quite anything, Johnny.
Yeah, but this would be easy for a guy like you. Besides, you're not afraid of anything. Not even a policeman.
Well, that's very flattering, Johnny, but I don't know what I can do.
Oh, you'll think of something, Mr. Holiday. You're a writer. You're smart.
Oh, but listen, my boy,
I'll bet you get my father out of jail in time for dinner.
Okay, Holiday. The boy says you can get his father out of jail in time for dinner. But what day? The story in the paper makes it look like they caught John Moran cold. You don't find stolen jewelry in a man's apartment if he didn't do the stealing. But there's a small boy waiting. Waiting with all the faith in the world. So, Holiday, do something.
The district attorney will see you now, Mr. Holiday.
Oh, thanks.
Holiday, haven't seen you for a long time.
Yeah, I know. I've been pretty busy.
Huh, busy, eh? Well, then what brings a promising young author down to City Hall?
Because he's a promising young author who made a promise. And I hope he didn't make a mistake.
Hey, what in the world are you talking about?
About a man named John Moran. You've got him locked up in your nice new jail.
Yes, and from what we've got on him, he's going to stay there for a while.
His son thinks Moran is innocent, Clark.
Yeah. I feel sorry for that boy. He came down and talked to me, but what could I do for him?
You've got the goods on Moran, then?
Absolutely. The police found some of the stolen stuff in his apartment.
Well, what's Moran's story?
A woman who works in the same building with Moran asked him to stop in at the jewelry store and pick up her watch. While he was there, this stick-up artist walked in and held up the place.
And that makes Moran guilty?
Don't be in a hurry. The stick-up artist used him as a shield when he beat it. Moran claims the man forced him to drive the getaway car out into the country.
Well, that still doesn't make him guilty. I think you've got the wrong person.
This is where Moran's story went wrong. He walked into police headquarters and told it, but it sounded too good to be true. They detained him while a detective went over and searched his apartment.
Oh?
The detective found part of the loot. Moran couldn't explain where it came from. Well, to our office, it looks like he pulled a clever gag. We think he's in with the holdup men.
What about the woman, the one who sent Moran after the watch?
Grace Willard? We don't have a thing on her. She's in the clear.
I see.
So, Holiday, you better forget about playing Don Quixote. Day of fighting windmills is over. Go home. Forget about Johnny Moran.
Sure, Holiday, just forget all about John Moran. Write Benita the story and take it out of the typewriter. But how are you going to write the dialogue for a man who has to tell a small boy that his father hasn't got a chance? And describe the look in that boy's eyes.
I don't care what that old district attorney said. My father isn't a crook.
And your father should have been able to explain the stolen jewelry they found at your place.
I'll bet he could, too. They just wouldn't listen to him.
Oh, now, Johnny, if your father's innocent, they'll let him go.
So you won't help me either.
But I'm trying, my boy. What else can I do?
Nothing, I guess. See you later, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, Johnny, listen to me.
I'm kind of busy right now. I gotta earn a lot of dough, I guess.
Johnny.
Because lawyers come pretty expensive, I heard.
Oh, look, kid.
You better go home, Mr. Holliday. I should have handled it personally in the first place.
Small boys have that knack, don't they? They can just vanish into thin air when they want to. You're quite a character, Holliday. Go home and write this on your typewriter. Write about the small boy who wanted you to get his father out of jail. And you didn't quite make the grade. Hello?
Mr. Holliday, this is Johnny. I'm up at the place where we live.
Yeah, Johnny?
There's something funny going on.
What are you talking about?
I'm afraid to go into our place. There's a man in there.
Do you know him?
He's going through the place, though. He's looking for something.
Johnny, listen. Run outside, find a policeman. I'll be right over.
I gotta get out of here.
Johnny, do what I said.
He just walked out the door. He saw me.
Get over to Moran's place fast, Holliday. You've got no time for fooling. He's not outside. Maybe he's upstairs. Oh, Johnny. Johnny! Where could that boy have gone to? Grace Willard. The woman who sent Moran up to the watch. If she knows Moran, she knows his boy.
Yes?
Oh, Miss Willard?
Yes.
Well, I'm Dan Holliday. Would you know where little Johnny Moran is?
Come in. Now, what's this about Johnny?
Well, he phoned me a few minutes ago from his place. There was a man going through it. He saw Johnny making the call.
Johnny's disappeared?
Yes.
You phoned the police? Do you think he's been hurt?
Well, the police knew nothing about it. I don't know what happened to the boy. That's why I came over here. I figured that if you knew his father, you knew Johnny, you know.
Poor Mr. Moran. I feel so badly about him. You know, if I hadn't asked him to get my watch, this never would have happened.
But that doesn't make it your fault, Miss Willard.
Oh, I feel terrible about it just the same. And now, Johnny disappearing.
He hasn't been here at all?
No. Let me think of it. Oh, by the way, I was just having some coffee. Would you care to join me?
Grace Willard is a very nice person. Really worried about the boy. Perhaps you'll come back with an idea.
Here's your coffee, Mr. Holliday. Now we'll talk.
Well, thanks.
Did Johnny recognize the man?
No, he didn't have time to say.
Well, perhaps he found a policeman on the street. He might have gone back to the house.
Well, maybe I ought to call back.
Johnny's a cute little fellow. Johnny has a father who's in jail. Johnny's quite concerned about his father and would like to set him free.
Grace Willard is stalling, Holliday. Waiting for something.
I don't know if Johnny will get his wish or not. You see, his father looks very guilty to the police.
Holliday, you idiot. That coffee was doped. The oldest gag in the world, and you swallowed it.
You look sleepy, Mr. Holliday. Are you feeling all right?
She looks like a reflection in one of those amusement park mirrors. She's long and skinny. No, she's short and fat. Holliday, get up on
How
your
do you
feet.
How you feel, Mr. Holliday? Are you all right? Answer me.
Get on your feet, I said. Walk, Holliday. Walk. Walk this thing off before it's too late.
You look very tired, Mr. Holliday. Let me get you a pillow.
Come on. Come on, Holliday. One big effort.
How do you feel, Mr. Holliday?
I can't make it.
You are listening to Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday. Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Oh, take it easy, Holliday. Take it easy. Turn slowly now. Maybe your head still is connected to the top of your neck. That's better. Better. What am I saying? Where am I? An alley. Oh, fine. Dan Holliday, author, found lying in an alley between yesterday's newspapers and tomorrow's trash. What you need right this minute is a quick change, a fast bath, and a little chat with a district attorney.
I've got a man going up to the Willard woman's place right this minute, Holliday.
Thanks, Clark.
This ties her up with the Moran case.
Sure, or else why would she give me knockout drops and have me dumped in an alley?
I'll bet anything she's disappeared. But why just knock you out? Why not dispose of you permanently?
I don't know, unless she was trying to kill time. Enough time to get something done.
Well, you can't do anything now. If she's disappeared, she won't stay lost for long. My men will bring her in.
Don't let her give him any coffee. She'll be out again.
Pardon me. District Attorney's Office, Clark speaking. Yes? Where? When? How is he? Thanks.
I'll see you later, Clark. I want to go over and see Johnny Moran.
I don't think you'll find him at home, Holliday.
Why not?
That was the hospital who just called. Johnny Moran was brought in a while ago, the victim of a hit-and-run driver.
And on top of that phone call about Johnny Moran is another one. Grace Willard checked out of the Wharton Hotel an hour ago. So, Mr. Holliday, they got you out of the way long enough to get to little Johnny. A small boy in a hospital. Me with an aching head and an aching feeling that something is very, very wrong. I think this is it, room 809. Johnny?
Hello, Mr. Holliday.
How do you feel, kid?
Kind of banged up.
Yeah, I know. The nurse said you weren't to do too much talking. So just let me ask a couple of questions.
It wasn't an accident, Mr. Holliday. He did it on purpose.
You sure about that, Johnny?
Yeah. I was walking down a side street. He had to swing way over to the wrong side to hit me.
Johnny, did he look like the same man who was in your place?
I didn't get a good look at him. He was bent down way behind the wheel.
Well, could you give me just a hint? Was he tall, short, thin, fat?
All I know is...
Yes? Johnny. Johnny. Johnny passed out and won't be permitted to talk for a while. Well, that puts it up to you, Holliday. Come on, you're an author. You write hundreds of situations like this one. Think. The boarding house where Johnny lives. Maybe the landlady saw the man. I certainly hope so.
Johnny Moran? Yes, I saw him come home, but it was quite some time ago.
Oh, did you see him leave?
Yes, he went upstairs. I heard him on the telephone, and then he came running down.
Who was the man chasing him?
Chasing him? There was no one chasing him.
Are you sure of that?
Well, of course I've been here all the time. Oh, poor little fella. Don't know what's going to happen to him, what with his father and all.
This doesn't make sense.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, nothing. You see, Johnny called me, told me there was a strange man in his place. The man saw him, he hung up the phone and disappeared.
But I saw no man.
Are you sure?
Well, only Joe Coakley, but he's one of my roomers. That is, he was.
Was? When did he move?
Oh, today, just after Johnny left.
Was he upstairs while Johnny was there?
Why, yes. Yes, he was.
Was he a friend of John Moran's?
Oh, no, no, he never spoke to anyone. Stayed in his room all day and went out at night.
Oh, one of those night flyers, huh? Could I see the room he occupied? This is Coakley's room, but it's empty. Well, Holliday, it looks like you're on the wrong track. Track? Or are you? Stub from a dance hall ticket. I'd better talk to Johnny about this. Johnny, the man who came out of your room, was he about my height? Did he have grayish hair? Did he wear a brown suit?
Yeah, that's the man, Mr. Holliday.
How come you never saw him before? He lived right across the hall from you.
That guy? He only went out at night after I was in bed.
Well, I'll see you later, Johnny.
Hey, where are you going?
Tonight I'm going dancing. This is a very nice place, Holliday. Admission 60 cents, which includes an evening of dancing. And from the looks of the customers, they're trying to get their money's worth.
Like to dance, fella?
Who, me?
You ain't not twins, are you?
No, I'm sorry. I'm afraid I'm a very bad dancer.
Oh, you let me be the judge of that. Come on, kid. You look good to me.
Oh, wait a second. Say, isn't that Joe Coakley over there?
Oh, you know Joe?
Yeah, and the girl with him.
That's his girlfriend, Grace Willard.
Oh, thanks. I'll see you later.
Hey, where you going?
This is it, Holliday. Only what are you going to do? They're leaving, and if you stop to make a phone call, you'll lose them. And I wouldn't like to lose that man. He's the one who hits small boys with big automobiles. They're going into that apartment house. This begins to look like the final chapter. Now to make a fast telephone call to an old friend, then better to get to the payoff. This is a very nice door. You can hear quite distinctly through it. Well, Holliday, here's where you cease to be a wallflower and become the life of the party.
Joe! It's Holliday!
Put up your hands, fella.
Sure. Sure.
Close that door, Grace.
Well, here we are. Aren't we?
I knew we'd find us, Joe. What are we going to do?
You finish packing that junk. We'll figure out something.
We can't let him stay alive.
Finish the packing, I said.
Too bad I didn't use poison in that coffee I gave him.
Quiet.
I noticed you were packing. Going away someplace?
What do you think? And get away from that bag, Holliday.
Oh, that's the stuff that was stolen from the store, huh?
None of your business.
Oh, going away together? You and Miss Willard?
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. You pull that, go down and pick up my watch routine in a lot of cities, huh, Joe?
Make him be quiet, Joe.
Hey, Joe, who was the girl who worked with you before you met Grace? You know, the one who lived in Cleveland, or was it Chicago? I always forget. Come on, Joe, what happened
to her? Shut up, you.
What happened to her, Joe? Or the girl before?
How do you know there was another girl, Holliday?
Well, Miss Willard, you don't think you're the only one, do you?
You're crazy.
Yeah? Ask him where he was last night.
Don't pay any attention to him, Grace.
He wasn't with you. Know where he was?
How do you know he wasn't with me?
The stub of a dance hall ticket I found in the other room. It calls for only one admission.
You shut up, I said.
Just a minute, Joe. Were you down there last night? Were you dancing with that blonde again?
Suppose I was. So what?
You've got a lot of nerve. You have me set up this whole deal. Have me find John Moran to play sucker for us. Have me frame the business of picking up my watch. I time it out perfect for you. What do? You go dancing with a blonde.
Grace, be quiet. This fellow's up to something.
Me? Now, what would I be up to?
What about that other girl he talked about? What happened to her, Joe?
Why don't you tell her, Joe?
Cut it out, will you?
Did she plant stolen jewelry in a sucker's room like I did to Moran?
Grace, listen.
Yeah. I'm listening. Go on, explain.
Holliday, where are you going?
Just opening the door. You see, I'd like the district attorney to hear the rest of your explanation, too. Chapter to a story I was afraid might have an unhappy ending. But Johnny Moran's father is free, the district attorney has Grace Willard, Joe Coakley and the stolen jewelry and Johnny? Johnny is out of the hospital.
Mr. Holliday?
What did you say, Johnny?
I said you might have been killed going up to the apartment like that.
No, I was safe for the DA just outside the door.
Gosh, and you figured it all out by yourself.
No, you helped, too, when you telephoned me. And I hate to mention this, kid, but did you bring the $18 with you?
Sure I did. I pay off, you know. Here.
Oh, thanks, kid. I was just a little worried.
I was going to pay before Mr. Holliday, but I didn't think he needed money that bad.
I needed it to put with this check. Here. There was a $500 reward for recovering the jewelry, and it's going to a bank account for you.
$500? Gee, gosh, I guess I'm rich.
Johnny, what are you going to do with all that money?
Well, the first thing I'm going to do is take you out and buy you a drink. How about an Idiot's Delight?
A what?
Idiot's Delight. It's got a pint of ice cream, 3 bananas, some oranges, and 7 flavors.
Well, Johnny, I don't know.
Mr. Holliday, I just heard that Johnny got out of the... Oh, there you are, Johnny. How do you feel?
I feel swell, Susie. I just invited Mr. Holliday out to have a drink.
He can't go out, Johnny. He's got some very important work to do.
Well, gee whiz.
Thanks a lot, Susie.
Thanks? What are you thanking me for?
You don't know it, but you just saved me from a horrible fate.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures and may currently be seen in Wild Harvest. Box 13 is written and directed by Ted Hediger. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker. Original music was composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. This is a Mayfair production.
It is not remarkable that so many of the reported ghosts and phantoms and supernatural visions have been observed just as night was falling. For that is a time when the mind is fatigued and is most subject to hallucinations. And yet, there are some, like that which Captain Nolan saw in the plains of Normandy, which cannot be so easily explained away.
It was during the latter days of the First World War. The cavalry troops under the command of Captain David Nolan had rendered valuable service in a score of crucial battles. They had been under fire for weeks on end, and now they were retiring behind the lines for a rest they had fully earned. The long column of horsemen moved slowly, wearily through the twilight. At their head rode Captain Nolan and two other officers. They were discussing how they intended to spend their leave.
You men can celebrate all you like. The only thing I want to do is to sleep.
Each man to his own taste, Digby. Mine happen to run toward wine, women, and song.
That sounds much more attractive to me.
In the state I'm in, I couldn't even think of...
Good Lord.
Captain Nolan broke off abruptly in the middle of the sentence. For it was just at that moment that he saw the phantom horsemen. They were clad in white, on white steeds, and they rode in a straight, silent column, paralleling the line of the captain's own men, not more than a dozen yards away. So swiftly did they move, and so soundlessly, that their horses' hooves seemed scarcely to be touching the ground. And the column did not end. It went on and on, one ghostly figure following another through the gathering dusk. Captain Nolan's first impulse was to turn to his fellow officers to call their attention to the amazing vision. But then he thought better of it, so he rode on in silence. For some reason, the men beside him had grown silent too. But a few moments later, while the captain's eyes were still fastened on the incredible cavalcade, Lieutenant Digby said suddenly,
"You may have something there after all, Captain. I could stand a good night's rest myself."
Nolan turned sharply and peered into Digby's face, as though he was seeking something there.
"What made you change your mind?" "Oh, I don't know. I suppose I'm more tired than I thought."
"It seemed to hit you rather abruptly."
"Yes. Yes, it did, didn't it, Captain?"
And that was all the lieutenant would say. And once again, silence fell among the three men. But this time, it was short-lived. For after another moment or so, Lieutenant Wayne blurted out violently, almost hysterically,
I can't stand this any longer. You see them? So does Digby. We're not dreaming. And we're not just tired either. That column of carrymen is really there. If it weren't, why should all three of us be watching it?
Yes, each of the three officers had seen the column at the same moment. And each had remained silent for fear of making himself look ridiculous. Night descended swiftly now, and the phantom horsemen were blotted from view. But at the next town, Captain Nolan sent back a searching party. They returned with the inevitable answer. No other cavalry troops were in the vicinity. None could have been. And yet, afterward, Captain Nolan and Lieutenants Digby and Duane, all men of unquestionable integrity, were willing to swear that they had seen the same identical vision. A vision incredible but true.
Douglas Fairbanks, Jr. in The Silent Men. The National Broadcasting Company proudly presents Douglas Fairbanks' production of The Silent Men. Transcribed stories of the undercover operations of the special agents of every branch of our federal government and their relentless fight against crime. Now here is Douglas Fairbanks.
Last year, Americans were victimized for more than $500,000 by counterfeiters. This case deals with a counterfeiting ring, one of the most cunning and daring in criminal history. In it, I play the role of Special Agent Sam Courtney, the file case of the Green Sedan, in which only the names and places are fictional. Queer, bogus, or paper is what the trade calls phony currency. A load of it had been dumped in Albany, $4,000 worth. And I'd been sent there to question some of the victims.
Yes?
I'd like to talk to Mrs. Corbett.
I'm Mrs. Corbett.
Oh, I do. About that counterfeit money, I'm a special federal agent. I'd like to ask a few questions.
Questions? What good are questions? Just give me back my $50 I was stuck for.
Well, the local report says you accepted three of the bills.
Do I get my money back?
Maybe when we catch him, you can put in a claim.
When you catch him, that's a laugh.
Three people cashed the bills.
Two men and a woman.
You described one of the men as having a scar on his neck.
Yes.
Now, what about the girl? Would you know her again?
75 people for lunch, and I'm supposed to take pictures. That money, the government ought to give it back.
Right, your congressman. The man with a scar, you'd recognize him?
Maybe. He drove the car, I remember that.
What kind of a car?
Oh, green, I think.
Big car, small one, two-door, four-door, what was it?
I don't know about cars. All I know is I'm out $50.
You don't think you could identify any of the three, do you?
I told you. Look, I got work to do.
Okay. I may contact you again, but only if I have to. I spent another 2 days in Albany gathering information. Then I checked into my divisional chief in New York City.
All right, Sam, come in.
Chalk up another take for him, chief. Close to 5,000 in Albany, tens and twenties.
This is making me look silly, Sam. I don't like looking silly.
One of the pushers had a scar on his neck. Drove a green sedan, seen in four different places.
The car's got a license, Sam. Did you run it down?
Four people saw the car, but not one of them remembers seeing the license plate.
I might have known it.
Only one thing they have in common, Chief. It's a green sedan, a light green sedan.
Oh, great, Sam. Wonderful.
They're turning out stuff good enough to get by the average banker. They keep hopping from city to city.
We're in a rut, Sam. You and me both.
Thanks.
We're forgetting the most important thing. Not the crime itself, but the people behind it.
Okay. So we know one of them has a scar on his neck, anyway.
And one of them's a woman, a good-looking girl, about 25, about 5'3 or 4.
Yeah, about.
Sam, go out and find me a man with a big, ugly scar on his neck. Guy that drives a green sedan.
Must be quite a few around town, hmm?
Then run them down. One of them belongs to us.
Medium, heavy build, scar on left side.
All right, Sam, beat it. You got work to do.
That is the understatement of the week.
¶¶
I spent the next 2 weeks in a maze of photographs trying to find the chief's Mr. Who. I tracked down every possible lead, but got nowhere. As a last resort, I contacted one of the characters of the underworld we lightly refer to as an informant.
Got a match, mister?
Sure.
Thanks. Seen anybody around I might know?
Well, we're all right. We're looking for a guy with a scar on his neck.
What's his name?
We don't know.
Think he's a New York boy?
Last seen in Albany.
What'd you want him for?
Never mind that.
Might be Ed Nello or Flashy Jordan. They're marked up like that.
It isn't anybody we got on record.
What'd you want him for?
Pushing queer.
Oh, the boys have been doing so well upstate.
Yeah. Know anything about him?
Well, I'll get in touch with you.
Well, call me as soon as you know. Anytime, at night or day.
How about a retainer? Say 50, huh?
Let's say 25.
All right, only don't let her get around that I'm cutting prices.
Maybe I was getting stale. A week went by and I was no nearer to anything. In the meantime, Washington sent down a half a dozen men to help out. We set up an elaborate protective system throughout the state. It wasn't functioning in time. They struck again before we were ready.
Buffalo. They got Buffalo. $6,000 phony reported in already.
They've got a smart setup, Chief.
Well, ours is smarter. I want those men, Sam.
Did the green car show up?
No. Neither did the man with the scar.
Our big lead, and he doesn't show up.
Well, he's around someplace. How about your friend, Ted?
Haven't heard from him yet.
Well, maybe you better get in touch with him.
All right. I tried, through the usual channels, to contact Ted Manning, my source of information on matters pertaining to fringe society. But he didn't call me back. I went looking for him. It took 2 days, but I finally located him sitting at the bar in the Green Light Cafe. I sat down beside him.
For crying out loud, what'd you come here for?
I left a lot of messages for you, Ted. You didn't answer.
I got nothing for you.
You should have called me.
You're not doing me any good sitting next to me here.
Okay. Meet me outside in 10 minutes.
Make it 15.
Be there. Good spot to sit down.
Oh, I never even knew there was a park around here.
You gotta look for these things.
That guy with the scar. I checked all around town.
90% of my job is knowing when people are lying, Ted.
Look, Mr. Courtney, you think I'd lie to a federal man?
Who is he, Ted?
Gus Manelli.
Manelli? Name's familiar.
Got out of Sing Sing about 7 months ago, armed robbery.
Oh, I got him now, yeah. But as I recall, none of his pictures show a scar.
He got cut up in a fight when he got out.
Is he around town?
I don't know.
Are they working out of New York?
It's like that kid in the beanstalk, Mr. Courtney. You start following it up, then you got an idea where it takes you, and you're back down in a hurry.
And that's the way it was with this thing, huh?
What I don't know, I can't talk about. Get it?
All right. Just one thing. What's Manelli's part in the setup?
Flunky. Errand boy.
Where does he hang out when he's in town?
So long, Mr. Courtney. This park air ain't good for me.
With a good lead to work on, some of my self-confidence returned. I got a batch of Manelli's police photographs and had one of the art boys paint in a scar on the left side of his neck. I took him down to Albany. Two of the four people who had seen him were positive in their identification. The other two, almost so. Back in New York, I learned about the fight Manelli had been in. The guy who'd knifed him was Nick Forbes, another thug, temporarily out of prison.
Well, what did I tell you, Sam? We start looking for people instead of machines and we're getting places. Now we've got two men to get, Gus Manelli and Nick Forbes.
How do you figure they tie in together? Just because they're both among the missing?
Men fight over two things, Sam. Women and money. We find Forbes and we can eliminate one of them.
You want me to call on Manelli's mother?
Yes. And Sam, I'm putting another man on this with you.
Yeah?
A younger man.
Someone who isn't in a rut, you mean, huh?
Just came in from Washington this morning. Nice kid. You'll like him.
But?
Who said any buts?
A certain curl in your left eyebrow, said it.
Well, he's 22 years old. Kind of excited about the whole thing, you know.
A novice? Oh, no.
Well, he topped the class in theory.
Valedictorian, class of 51, eh?
Well, he's apt to be a little over-anxious about his first assignment. You might have to kind of hold him down a little.
Where is he?
He's out in the hall waiting for you.
Al Banning was a nice kid, and like the chief said, young and eager. Walking beside him in the bright sunlight that afternoon made me feel a little old and tired. You understand, Al, we've got to find Gus Minnelli or the guy who knifed him, Nick Forbes. You've studied their pictures, know their chief characteristics, don't you?
I'd know them in a minute.
That's the stuff, boy. You're going to keep Forbes home covered in case he turns up.
Sounds kind of inactive. He might not even show up.
Well, it's happened that way lots of times.
What about a relief man for food and such necessities?
You'll improvise. The minute he shows up, call the office. If he comes out before we can get there, tail him. Do the best you can.
I don't want to brag, Mr. Courtney.
Call me Sam, just Sam.
I topped the whole class in shadowing.
Oh, yeah, the class, yeah. I forgot the class.
What do you want?
I want to see Gus.
He's not here.
You his mother?
Yes.
What time will he be home?
He doesn't stay here anymore.
Where can I reach him? I'm a friend of his.
Good friends he has. To prison they lead him.
Is he in New York?
I don't know. He comes here no more. Now that he has a wife, he needs no one else.
Gus married? I never heard that.
And you a friend of his? 4 months they have been man and wife. And I have not yet met her. That is a son for you.
What was the girl's name?
Catherine MacDonald. It's a shame to bring her to me.
Maybe he's ashamed of her, Mrs. Minnelli.
Thank you. Good day to you.
Like the song says, first there were none, then there was one, Gus Minnelli. Then there were two, Nick Forbes. And then there were three, Catherine MacDonald. Number three had no police record, but we found out where she had worked, and some friends of hers provided us with snapshots that we converted into pictures. We sent a couple of hundred of these out to post offices and police stations in the state. One night, Al Banning, my young assistant, phoned me. Oh?
Sam, I did it.
Did what, kid? What's the matter?
I had Forbes and I let him get away.
What?
He showed up at home a couple of hours ago.
When'd you call in?
He just stayed a couple of minutes and came out. He walked to the corner and hailed a cab.
You lost him?
I had him till he got to a place on Adelaide Street.
What kind of a place?
He went in and I covered the front door. About 15 minutes later, I heard a car pull away around the side. It was Forbes.
You're sure?
Positive.
He must have had the car planted there waiting for him. Al, I'm afraid to ask. Did you get the license number?
N. Finelli, 71Y for Yale, 04.
Good boy. Now phone it into motor vehicles and have them run a make on it.
I did. I've got to call them back soon.
Where are you now?
Near the warehouse on Adelaide Street, where I lost Forbes.
What kind of a warehouse?
Acme Printer Supply. Ah. Someone's still in the office. Shall I question them?
No, don't do anything. Just wait there for me.
I didn't figure he'd leave around the side.
Well, he must have picked up some paper or ink.
I was stupid. I should have known.
Oh, forget it, kid.
The guy's still in there. Shall we go in and talk to him?
No. He might tip him off that we're getting warm.
Maybe he's on the level.
We can't take any chances. Tomorrow you go in and find out if they handle AAA Pearson bond paper. The brand they're printing the money on now.
It didn't show at home. I checked.
All right. We've got things to do.
The owner of the car. They should have it by now.
Come on, kid. The night's young. Only 11:45. Police headquarters had the information on the car ready for us when we got there. It was owned by a Mr. Blake, Andrew Blake, certified accountant. His address, 926 Ashley Drive in Long Island. It was nearly 2 a.m. when we parked the car about half a block from that number. Al was tense and nervous, like a novice should be.
Footsteps sound kind of loud this time of night.
I was wondering when you were going to develop some of the neophyte symptoms.
I've got them now.
Let's get around the back. We'll take a look in Mr. Blake's garage. We'll go up this lane.
What if it's locked?
Then we get in anyways. Place isn't locked. Put your light on.
Here's the license number. NLE71YA04.
This the car?
No. I don't get it.
This car hasn't been out of this garage for 3 months. Tires are flat.
I tell you, that's the license number. I saw it.
But this isn't the car, huh?
No. Maybe the plates were taken off and put back.
You see the rust on these screws? These plates have been where they are for a long, long time.
I wrote it down right away. I tell you, it's the same number.
Sure. Let's go. The big lead dissolved into minus zero. We even went so far as to check on all license numbers that had the same four markings, but it led us nowhere. I sent him back to keep an eye on Forbes' house. A few days later, the chief sent for me.
Sam, I've taken Al off Forbes' house. I put someone else there instead.
All right with me.
He asked me to let him follow a couple of leads of his own. You don't mind, do you?
What for? It's 10 years since I sulked over something like that.
Yeah, the boy's made some interesting discoveries.
So that's what this has been leading up to, eh?
He found out that the McDonald girl, Gus Minnelli's wife, used to work for the accountant. What's his name?
Blake.
Then he got into Blake's garage and took one of the sets of plates off and had them tested in the lab.
The kid's all right at that. What did he find?
Some bits of clay, the type they make molds out of.
I'll be darned. You figure somebody made a cast of the license plate, huh?
Yeah.
Nelly could have gotten to it, I guess.
Maybe the accountant himself. How'd you like to go and have a talk with him?
That's Al's lead. I think he's the one to...
Well, that's one thing he's not ready for yet. Just an exploratory talk. Don't spring anything on him.
No, I'll play it soft and sweet. Waltz tempo. Mr. Blake, CPA, faced me across his desk. He was a thin, wiry, nervous little man.
The secretary said you were a federal agent.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, what do you want to see me about?
You had a Catherine McDonald working for you some time ago.
Working? A light-headed, gum-chewing incompetent.
Any ideas to her whereabouts?
She would hardly have reason to keep in touch with me. I had to discharge her.
Why?
Incompetence, I told you before.
You haven't seen her since?
Who says I have?
Nobody. I just asked.
Well, I haven't.
Was she ever at your home in Long Island?
She may have been. See here, it seems that your questions are directed towards me, not her.
Not at all.
Well, I don't know where she is. What's she done?
You haven't seen her since her discharge?
Are you baiting me? If you have proof to the contrary, just say so.
You're very jumpy, Mr. Blake. What about?
Well, there's an inference in your tone I resent. And I'll say nothing further without benefit of counsel.
That's very interesting.
I will not be browbeaten into statements. If you persist, I'll phone my lawyer.
Don't bother. It's enough to know that you feel the need of counsel.
There you go, distorting, putting words in my mouth.
Goodbye, Mr. Blake. Sometimes high-strung people react like Mr. Blake to any law enforcement agent. But in his case, I detected a genuine fear of being questioned. I put him down for future reference. I just settled myself for some sleep that night when the telephone rang.
Hello?
This is Al.
Who else phones this time of night?
Did the chief tell you about the Acme Paper Company having AAA bond paper?
Yeah, 3 days ago. You phoned to tell me this.
Not exactly. What I really wanted to tell you was that I've just taken my date home.
My pulse is racing madly for you.
She's a swell looker.
Okay, so you love her. Marry her and I'll present you with a waffle iron. Good night, Al.
Maybe I don't make myself clear. This date of mine is someone extra special.
I'm listening.
She works for the Acme Paper Supply Company.
Huh?
Tonight she told me something you ought to know.
Well, for crying out loud, let's have it.
Forbes is due back any day now for some more paper.
Good, good boy. Now, first thing tomorrow, find a spot from which you can see anyone who comes or goes out of that building.
There's an empty restaurant across the street.
Find out who owns it and we'll stake out there.
I've already done that.
Okay. You know, kid, I'm beginning to wonder.
About what?
You wouldn't be gunning for the chief's job, would you?
I couldn't stand it being in an office all day.
Next day, I joined Al in the empty restaurant. Everything had been removed but the smell of stale grease. 4 days went by. We took turns sleeping. Always one of us was stationed at the window looking out. It was late afternoon. From the buildings nearby, workers were pouring out to try and grab that seat on the subway.
I wonder what it'll be like to eat a warm meal again, Sam.
Oh, it goes a lot longer than this sometimes. 11 days I sweated it out once. It was down in...
4 more days and I'll land in Bellevue. Sam, come here.
What is it?
That car around the side of the building, the green one.
Forbes.
That's not the same car I used last time. But the license number's the same. N71Y04.
Switching plates. Put them on different cars. Oh, that's an old trick.
He's coming out the front door. Car's around the side, but he's coming out the front door. We'd better do something quick. He'll get away again.
Hold it, hold it. He must have left a spotter on the corner to see if he's being followed.
Look, she's coming towards him now.
You know her, Al? Take a good look.
Gus Minnelli's wife.
She's giving him the okay sign. That's our cue. Get ready for some fancy tailing, kid. Forbes tried every known gimmick to test for a shadow. He ran signals, made unexpected left and right turns, stopped and started again suddenly. I kept up with his crazy maneuvers. I'd been at this sort of thing longer than he had. At last, he was satisfied that he was in the clear. He headed for Brooklyn. When he got there, he stopped in front of a little Italian restaurant. We pulled up half a block behind him. Forbes locked the car, and he and the girl went inside the cafe.
I couldn't have followed him 5 blocks.
This comes under the heading of postgraduate work, my boy.
I could sure go for some food.
Some other time, maybe tomorrow.
Maybe we should pick them up now. Supposing we lose them.
Such optimism I can do without. These people are going to lead us to the printing plant. And the plates. That's the trouble with you youngsters.
Okay, Dad.
Don't you dad me. I can
still... What's the matter?
You know what, kid? We may be up most of the night. How'd it be if I caught a few winks now?
Hmm? Go ahead, Dad. I'll wake you.
I hardly settled back on the car seat when Al shook me awake. The green car was hitting the road again. They picked up another man in the restaurant and he drove off with them. They parked the car in a garage on 46th Street. They got out and hailed a cab. Each of them was carrying a parcel wrapped in heavy brown shipping paper. Then the cab dropped them off at the big bus depot on 58th, and the girl went to the ticket window and bought 3 bus tickets. I saw them board the bus for Saratoga, and when she pulled out, we were right behind her. It was a long, grim ride. 5 hours worth. About 2 o'clock in the morning, the bus stopped in a little town called Rosedale. We did likewise.
Who'd think the bus would stop in a spot like this?
Huh?
Sam, they're getting out.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. Now, I'll go after them on foot. Car's no good now.
What'll I do? Wait here?
Yeah. If I wave to you, pull up.
They're just standing there.
I think I know why. They're waiting for someone to pick them up.
Then let's take them now.
No, sit tight. They're no good to us now. There it is.
You're just going to sit here and let them get away?
I told you they're no good to us now. You got to find the plant. It's around here someplace.
If you're letting them get away, I want to start up.
Turn the ignition off.
Sam!
Turn it off! Come on.
Where are we going?
The general store. Small towns generally have the post office in one of the general stores. Here it is.
Yes, but...
Living quarters are in the back. Now, the guy should have heard me by now.
There's a light coming on the corner window.
Yeah.
What do you want? I'm not serving anyone this time of night.
Open up. United States federal agents.
Agents? All right.
This guy will be able to tell us where we can find them.
Hope you're right.
Federal agents? What do you want?
Let us in.
Give us some light here, will you?
There been a holdup around here?
You know most everybody who lives around here, don't you?
Yeah, this time of the year I do. Summer season hasn't started yet.
We're looking for a Gus Minnelli.
Minnelli. No such name in this district. How about Forbes? Nick Forbes. Oh, that's another one I never heard.
Look, maybe you'll recognize him by these pictures. The one with the scar here is Minnelli.
No, never seen him.
That's Forbes.
Him neither. Oh, this woman, I know her. That's Mrs. Tetley. Comes in often.
Good, good.
Yeah, she and her husband took over the old Barrett farm. Pretty badly run-down place it was.
You sure this is her?
No, pretty as a picture. Sure, I know her.
Where is the Barrett place?
Oh, it's way up on the hill. Tough spot to get to while it's dark, though. You have to know these parts.
You know these parts?
None better.
All right, get some clothes on. You'll take us there. He was a reluctant guide, but a good one. In half an hour, we were sneaking up a dirt road in the hill above the town. Near a clump of bushes, he told Al to stop the car.
That's where Mrs. Tedley lives, down the hill through this brush.
It's kind of chilly.
Well, 2 hours before sunup, gets cold up here. Some steep drops around here, better not move around before daylight.
You better go back now. We'll pick up the car later.
Anything you say, but it's a long walk back to town.
Daylight broke cold and frosty, and we started inching our way down the hill. It was a tough trip for a guy who'd been spending too much time in the cities. By 8 o'clock, we were close enough to get a good view of the farmhouse.
I never knew a guy could be so cold and still be alive.
Someone's coming out the front door now.
I think it's Forbes. It is.
Another couple behind him. Well, lots of company. There's our girl, Mrs. Minnelli.
This is it, Sam?
I think so.
It's a little exciting. My first jump.
Instead of a chill, you got a fever now, eh?
Uh-huh.
They're going into another building around the side. Let's work our way down.
That'll bring us in pretty close.
Yeah. Well, we'll be all right. They think they've got the world by the tail.
They thought they perfected it.
Yeah, they all do.
Stop. We'd better. We're almost on top of them.
Listen from that window.
A printing press.
Oh, brother, that's music to our weary agent's ears.
Stop. Here comes Mrs. Minnelli with a tub. Ready to hang out her wash. Real domestic-like.
Let's move in a bit.
They never told us it'd be like this.
Sometimes it's like this, sometimes it isn't.
That stuff she's hanging out on the line. It's not clothes. Sam, look.
Uncut counterfeit currency.
She's hanging it out to dry.
Yeah. I wonder who's behind this operation.
Behind it? You see them in front of your eyes.
You kidding? These guys are workhorses. The guy who does the thinking is just getting into some office in some swanky building right now.
We're just going to stand here?
No. One of us is going back to town and call the chief and bring in a raiding party.
Oh, my pulse beat. If a doctor were to take it now, he'd give me oxygen or something.
Should simmer down on your way back to town, Sonny. Okay, get moving. This is Douglas Fairbanks again. The smashing of the counterfeit ring in the case of the green sedan closes another chapter in the distinguished chronicle of our silent men, the special agents of all branches of our federal government, who daily risk their lives to protect the lives of all of us. Next week, we will tell you a story involving diamonds, orchids, and murder in the file case entitled Flowers for Madame, another venture undertaken for our protection by the Silent Men.
The Silent Men is produced and directed by Warren Lewis. The case of the green sedan was written by Lewis and Russoff and transcribed in Hollywood. Only the names and places were fictional. Featured in our cast were Charles Smith, Paul Frees, Virginia Gregg, Eddie Fields, and Dal McKinnon. Your announcer is Don Stanton. Douglas Fairbanks is currently to be seen in his own motion picture production of Mr. Drake's Duck. Listen again next week and every week for other exciting cases involving the law enforcement adventures of the special agents of our federal government. For they are the Silent Men.